Bibles to turn to Genesis chapter 26. Over the years, we have an elder stateswoman, or I should say a younger stateswoman, in the congregation that has cracked me up with some phrases. Not to embarrass her, I won't tell you her name, but Nora told me a couple of phrases over the years I never heard of. And I might have told you this. Years ago, I think it was in prayer meeting, she would say to me, recounting some of her old acquaintances over years past, that so-and-so went to normal school. And I said, is there any normal school? I mean, I never heard that phrase before, but apparently it was a phrase of some years past when about normal school. And then we were talking about family and getting older. And all of us will get older. So she was saying to me one day, I never thought I would say this, but I looked in the mirror the other day, and she said this, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, I am my mother after all." And, that's kind of telling. And I never heard that before. One of the other phrases that she enlightened me on was, "You can't take a U-Haul to the grave." So those are my Nora-isms for today. But I want to concentrate on the one mirror, mirror on the wall. I am my mother or father, parents after all. I am sure that over the years, when we were younger, we would look at our parents and say, I'll never do that. I'll never be like that. Yeah. And sometimes, we're able to break free from some destructive things, but sometimes we find out, no, they've crept in, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And you look in the mirror and we say, mirror, mirror on the wall. Yeah, there you go. I see my father, I see my mother. Now, having said all of that, we are all a product of what I call foo. F-O-O. Not food. That's coming. Foo. F-O-O. It's an abbreviation. And all it means is family of origin. All right. Ever heard that phrase before? Family of origin. We can't escape it. We all get infected by it, if I can put it that way. Some of that infection is good. Some of that infection is not so good. As well as I do, those of us who are parents, how fast our children pick up some of the bad things that they see in us, if we're honest. And we also know how sometimes they do pick up the good things that they see in us. And Sharon's back here cracking up. I don't even want to know what she's thinking. But let me hear you say it. Foo. Family of origin issues. They impact us more than we ever think. And the biblical characters aren't exempt from that. I want to look with you today about Isaac. And the Bible's not real detailed about Isaac's life, but we have enough here to know that he grew up with Abraham and Sarah. He grew up in some good stuff, and he grew up with some bad stuff. And he got a little of both. He got a little of both in his life, just like we all did. We got a little of both. You might say, well, what's some of the bad stuff? Well, sometimes we learn how to handle frustration from our parents, don't we? Sometimes we learn how to handle success from our parents. Sometimes we learn how to handle stress and problems from our parents. And that all goes into this whole thing I call foo, or family of origin. If you look with me at verse 1 of chapter 26, before I read it, I want to say to you this. In my younger days, when I was Joey's age and a little bit younger, many moons ago, I used to look at older people and say, I can't wait to get there. Because by the time they're there, they don't have to face the same temptations and the same stuff that I have to face. And little did I know how stupid I was. Only to find out that as you grow up and you get older, we face the same temptations that our parents faced, sometimes in different forms, but we face the same temptations. But each stage of life brings a new set. It really does bring a new set. And I thought as a young person, I look at somebody as old as Angelo. He just turned, he had a birthday too, so I won't tell you how old he is. But he's 57 years old. Backwards. I won't say. But I look at somebody like Angelo when I was young and I say, yeah, he's got it all together. Man, he's past all the garbage that you have to deal with and all. And here I am at 62 saying, there's a whole new set of stuff you got to deal with as you go on. Does this sound familiar? All right? So look at verse 1 with me. Now there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine in Abraham's time, and Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Now, this Abimelech was different from the Abimelech that Abraham dealt with because it's a lot of years later. Just want to make that clear. It says, the Lord appeared to Isaac. The Lord graciously appeared to Isaac, and he says, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land where I tell you to live. Stay in this land for a while. I will be with you and will bless you. For you and your descendants, I will give these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will give them all these lands. And through your offspring, all nations will be blessed because Abraham obeyed me and did everything I required of him, keeping my commandments, my decrees, and my instructions. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. One of the first things I notice here is that he had to face the same type of temptation his father faced. But in this case, God was gracious enough to break in and say, hey, look, don't make the same mistake your dad did. Don't go down to Egypt. Stay here. And I'm asking you to stay here, not based on an empty promise, but based on the promise that I will continue the covenant I had with your father through you. I will bless you. I will make you a blessing to other nations, but you need to stay here and face the problem. Abraham ran from it. That was the initial inclination of Isaac, but in this case, God intervened and said, no, don't run from a problem. I'm saying, nothing much has changed in 3,000 years. You know, when we face problems, sometimes we do what? We're tempted to run rather than face it. And we face problems, or we ought to be facing problems, not in our own power, not in our own strength, but in the strength of God, in the strength of the Word, in the strength of the Holy Spirit, based on his promises towards us. And so rather than run from a problem, we should face it. Well, Isaac obeyed. So Isaac stayed. But you know, God is so incredible. He passed this part of the test, and I think Isaac got it through his head that he's going to face the same type of temptations as his father faced. And then God, you know, in order to develop his character, said, okay, Isaac, we're going to up the ante here. We're going to up the ante because you still have some more developing to go in your own character. So look what happens. In verse 7, he says, the men of that place asked him about his wife, and he said she is what? So he passed part A. Part B comes along. What does he do? He did the same thing his father did. And he wasn't at the point yet where he said, mirror, mirror on the wall, I am my father after all. Still had a little bit ways to go yet to learn that lesson. Look at the reason why he did what he did. He thought the men of this place might kill me, kill Isaac, on the account of Rebekah because she was beautiful. So he didn't have her interest at heart. He had his own hiney at heart, saying, I'm going to, hey, I don't want to get killed. I'll just say she's my sister, I'll lie. Instead of trusting in God, I'll lie. You know that God is not going to let us get away with those things. You realize that. We may be able to fly under the radar for a while, but God will ultimately expose that type of sin. And here's the humbling part. I want you to look at the way God exposes this. In verse 8, it says, when Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from a window, saw Isaac caressing his wife, Rebekah. Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she is really your wife. Why did you say she is my sister? So Abimelech, the pagan, right? I want you to keep that in mind. Abimelech, the pagan, sees the truth firsthand, sends for Isaac, the one who follows by faith, and says, why did you do it? Can you imagine how humbling that had to be? Has an unbeliever ever called you out on something? Has that ever happened? That's never happened to anybody here, right? Never happened to anybody here. Where an unbeliever would say, I thought you followed Christ. Why did you do this? I thought you were one of those Christians. Why did you do this? I really believe that's a way that God finally humbles us to say, come on, look in the mirror, because what you're doing is repeating the sin of your parents. And God used an unbeliever to expose it. I'll give you a parallel example, not quite the same example, but for those of you who are parents and you keep talking to your children about the things of the Lord and obeying because you love the Lord and all, and you might be driving on the parkway and they're in the back seat and they look at your speedometer and they say, Dad, I thought you said as followers of Christ, we should obey the law. Well, yeah, we should. Why are you going 80 miles an hour? That's a legitimate question, isn't it? I know, there's seven years difference between my brother and I, and I'm sure we remember things differently from different perspectives. But sometimes I heard in my own house, don't do as I do, do as I say. I understand that parents have to be parents, but we're also supposed to model what we teach. We're supposed to model what we believe. And if we don't, there's that sense of hypocrisy that's in there that can really propagate what I will call generational sin. If that's not broken, that could be passed on from generation to generation to generation. That's exactly what was happening here. I'll give you an example of how that happens. And it happens almost without us realizing it. I've told you this story before, but it's such a great story. This engaged couple finally gets married. The day comes. And the bride watched her mother cook all through the years. And her mother taught her how to cook. And her new husband's favorite dish happened to be ham. So first night that they're home from their honeymoon, she really wants to make her husband happy. She prepares a ham. So she gets the ham and she cuts off the end of it, puts it in a pan. She does all the spices just like her mother told her, puts it in the oven. And her husband comes home and she says to him, I made you a ham. I really hope you like it. She takes it out, and he loves it. He just devours it. She's happy. She calls the mother and says, "Hey, Mom, I want to thank you for teaching me to cook. I just prepared ham for my husband. He loved it." She says, "Tell me what you did." "I did the same things you did. I cut off the end of the ham. I put spices on it and I put it in a pan, put water in it, just like you did. Turned out perfect." And the mother said, "That's good. But why'd you cut off the end?" She says, "I watched you all those years cut off the end of the ham." And the mother says, "The only reason why I cut it off is I didn't have a pan big enough." But it serves to show how we pick up things like that. And that's what happens here with Isaac. And God used a pagan king to call him out on it. Look at verse 10. Oh, I'm sorry. Verse 10. It says, "Then Abimelech said, 'What is this that you have done? One of the men might well have slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us.'" So Abimelech gave orders to all the people, "Anyone who harms this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." The king does what's right. The pagan does what's right here. And I think at this point, Isaac said, "I am my father's son. I blew it. But he didn't stay there. He confessed it. He went on. And look at verse 12. He says, "Isaac planted crops in the land, and that same year reaped 100-fold. So he knew that he learned something from God here. He went on with God in faith, and he confessed it, and he repented of it. And then he planted crops, and God started blessing him. God started blessing him. Because the Lord blessed him, the man became rich. Isaac became rich. And his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. And we have kind of a snapshot of the maturing process spiritually for Isaac here. Isaac kind of got the message that God's blessing somehow is tied up with loving obedience to him. All right? You got that? That God's blessing somehow is tied up with loving obedience to him. Now, let me put a caveat in there, because God is free to choose to bless whoever he chooses. All right? That's his prerogative. But generally speaking, as we walk in obedience, doing the right thing in the sight of God, walking in the power of the Spirit, walking under the authority of the Word, and doing the right thing because we love God, not because we're trying to get a reward, but because we love God, God seems to honor that with blessing. In this case, it was material blessing. In a lot of cases, it's not material blessing. It's other kinds of blessings. And I want to be careful here, because sometimes pastors will preach that if you obey God, God's going to give you whatever you want. And that's not true. Okay? God will give you whatever you need. And he'll give you blessings over and above that. Excuse me. But not all God's blessings are material. God's blessings happen in a lot of other ways. Why do I say that? Because the one who loved God in perfect obedience and loving obedience was named Jesus. And at one point in Jesus' ministry, he was homeless. Do you ever think about that? He says it. He says, "The Son of Man doesn't even have a place to lay his head." I'm sure his clothes weren't the latest in style. I'm sure that he would have liked a Cadillac camel, but he couldn't afford one, and he walked everywhere. We know that from the Gospels. And if you looked at how God blesses in different people's lives, it's hard to draw conclusions that are hard and fast, that if we obey God, that he's going to bless us with material things all the time. No. He's going to bless us with exactly the blessing we need at that point in time. But in this case, he ritually blessed Isaac. Look at verse 13. The man became rich and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks, herds, and servants that the Philistines, what? Envied him. Nothing much has changed, huh? They envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up filling them with earth. So here you have Isaac, he's planting crops and all. Digging wells in the Mideast is a big deal because water is so scarce. It's also, I believe, symbolic of us journeying with God in faith. It's kind of a Hebrew idiom of digging wells for God so that what can come out? The living waters. And Abraham did that. If you notice in Abraham's life, anytime he settled someplace, he would dig a well and set up an altar. Digging a well for the water that gives life, and then setting an altar up to worship God. So that's what Isaac was trying to do. It's a good thing. Dig the wells, but out of jealousy, the Philistines were following him, stopping up the wells. And I want you to notice something. He didn't stop and fight. That would be our inclination, right? Look at this. In verse 16, he said, then Abimelech said to Isaac, move away from us. You have become too powerful for us. Now, here's a jealous king now, jealous of the power of this powerful man. Says, so Isaac moved away and there encamped in the valley of Gear and where he settled. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham had died, and he gave them the same names his father gave him. So Isaac is settled someplace else. And the reason why he didn't fight, I believe, was he had God's promise now firmly embedded in his heart, saying, okay, if the king doesn't want you there, move, and I'm going to count that God's going to show me the right place to go. And he kept walking by faith that way. In fact, this happened several times. Look at verse 19. It says, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But herders of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac's and said, this water is ours. So the jealousy and bitterness still goes on. So he named the well Esek, which means dispute in Hebrew, because they disputed with him. They dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also, and they named it Sidna, which means opposition in Hebrew. So he moved. Talking about moving a lot, okay? He moved and then dug another well, and no one quarreled over it. He named it Rehoboth, which means room in Hebrew, saying that the Lord has given us room and will flourish. And we will flourish in the land. In other words, since nobody quarreled over this well and things were going well, Isaac said, okay, Lord, this is where you want us to stay. So we're going to stay here and we're going to flourish here. And we're basing this on your promise. So look at what happened. It says from there, he went up to Beersheba. That night the Lord appeared to him, said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid. Aren't those great words? Don't be afraid. There's a lot in this life to be fearful of, isn't there? One of the things I realized as I got older was you realize how uncertain the future is. Have you had that experience? Not that our future in heaven, I'm not talking about that, but you know, you get older and you say, okay, am I going to wake up today? You know, that's a good thing. You know, am I going to have new aches and pains today? Am I going to have, what challenges are going to face us today? You begin to realize that there's a lot of uncertainties that life can bring. But here, the Lord says, hey, Isaac, I'm the same God as your father. I'm the same God as your father had. Don't be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you, and you will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. And look what Isaac did. Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. He worshipped. There he pitched his tent, there, and his servants dug a well. Meanwhile, Abimelech, who was so much against Isaac after he had become powerful, had come to him in Gerar with a personal advisor and a commander of the forces. And in verse 27, it says, Isaac asked him, "Why have you come to me, since you were hostile to me and sent me away?" They answered, "We clearly saw that the Lord was with you." Whoa. Isaac just passed one of the most important tests. When unbelievers look at us as followers of Jesus Christ, they want to see how we handle the pressures of life. They want to see how we are going to respond. They want to see how we're going to handle a bad situation. And whether they realize it or not, they're making some conclusions from this. This is what happened with Abimelech. And Abimelech says, after watching how you handle yourself, after my people plugged up your wells and you just moved, and they plugged it up again and you just moved, and you moved to a spot where you seemed like you had peace and nobody bothered your well, I'm impressed with the way you handled the situation, so your God must have been in it. He says, let us make a treaty. Oh, let me go back to verse 28 again. So there ought to be a sworn agreement between us, between you and us. It says, let us make a treaty that you will do no harm, just as we did not harm you, but always treat you well and send you away peacefully, and now you are blessed by the Lord. And then it says Isaac made a feast for them. So here's where I want to go with this. I have to ask, how do we handle life when it gets tough? How do we deal with the problems of stress, the problems of a bad report from the doctor, problems with loss of a job? How do we deal with the problems that will come up in life? Do we run? You say, well, I didn't run physically. No, but there's other ways we can run, right? What are some of the other ways we could run? Say it louder. We can run away emotionally, right? We can try to bury the situation. We can run away by going shopping in the mall, right? I better not hear an amen to that. Do you know most credit card purchases are done when people are depressed over a situation? It's a fact. You could ask Dave Ramsey. He'll tell you that. You can deny the problem exists. You can kind of say, it doesn't exist. You know, it doesn't. Yeah, it does. And the problem is not going to go away until we face it. If you ever want to do a great study in the New Testament, look at some of the character failures of Paul, of Timothy, of John Mark, in the New Testament, where they had some conflict and friction, and God being so gracious in there, didn't give up on them, because Paul was stubborn sometimes, you know. Barnabas had to be the mediator in that dispute, but God will always bring us back to the problem to face it. We think we can run away from it? We can. God somehow will always bring us back to the problem to face it. How we face it is going to matter. Will we face it in a way that brings honor to Him, or bring dishonor to Him? We can escape through the illegal use of drugs and alcohol, right? Go ahead. Let me go one further. We could eat a lot of cookies, right? There's a lot of ways that we can escape. I want to suggest this to you. If you think back over the way your family handles stress and problems, you're probably doing it some of the same ways. But God can help you respond in a more healthy way, in a way that brings healing ultimately, and you can go on, you can face the issue and go on and learn. Sometimes problems are faced with a lot of yelling and screaming, a lot of anger. Maybe sometimes problems are faced with road rage. That's ugly, huh? Unfortunately, sometimes some of the problems are faced with physical violence. I mean, we can go on and on, but family of origin issues play a lot into this. We need to recognize that. Joey, can you put up that last slide? Just want to just give you a couple of points. I could spend years on this, but just a couple of points is the influence of family. We really, not to dwell there, but we need to know the influence our families have had on us. The good and the bad. And we need to be honest about it. Because what we do is we can celebrate the good, but the bad we can bring before God and say, Lord, I still need healing. And only God can heal those things as we face them. It may take some time in some instances, because the deeper the wound, the more time it's going to take to heal. But only God can heal it. Know the influences. Acknowledge, we need to acknowledge the failures and the faults. Is there anybody here who's perfect? Did anybody here have perfect parents? Okay. We need to acknowledge the failures and the faults. Be faithful in everyday things of life. You know what I mean by that? People will look at us and how we handle life. If we're faithful in the little things, it's going to lead to blessings and a greater testimony for the one who saved us. For instance, what does it mean to be faithful in the little things of life? Be faithful at your job. Don't show up late. Give an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. Kelsey, why are you laughing when I said that? I didn't. Okay. Don't show up late. Don't steal from your employer. What does that mean? You don't steal any materials or you don't steal time? Okay. Say again, Laura. Material and time, right? And that's easy to do, right? You take some staples, you take some pens, you say, ah, they're rich, they can afford it. But we justify it. We steal time by playing games on the computer, by talking on the phone when we shouldn't, you know? I mean, there's a whole list. Be faithful in the little things. Be faithful in the things of the family. Be faithful in the things that matter. Be faithful in worship. Keep on course when facing opposition. By the power of the Holy Spirit, we keep on course when facing opposition. The temptation is to run. The temptation is to escape. The temptation is to deny. The temptation is to bring some comfort into our lives to ease the pain, rather than facing it with God and relying on His promises. And I don't mean to make this oversimplified. I know it's more complicated than this. However, this is a place where we can start. Let me say this, that most parents legitimately try to be good parents. They really do. But nobody's perfect. This is not something where you would come back to me and say, hey, Pastor, let me tell you the reason I am what I am. And I could justify my bad behavior. It's my parents' fault. No, it's still choices we make. I understand the influence. I understand that. But in the power of God, we have the ability to break that with His help. I taught for a year. I taught biology in high school for a year after I got out of college. And it was, I actually had, I guess, I don't know how they do it now. I had four tracks of classes. I had two top learning tracks. I had a, what they would call a normal track, and I had a one that was special needs. All right. I know they do it differently now. But I actually found the lower track kids more eager to learn. It was interesting to see this happen. Some of the kids who gave me trouble in the higher tracks, I was great. I didn't take anything. I said, they gave me a problem. I said, hey, you don't want to be here? Go down to the vice principal's office. You have my blessing. Some of them would come to me after school and say, hey, Pat, let me tell you, Mr. S, why I'm the way I am. And they would go into this whole thing about how their home was in a mess. And I'd say, I get that. I understand that that hurts. I understand how that can have an influence. But you have a choice through that all. You can either do the right thing, or you can continue to do the wrong thing and use that as an excuse. I don't know if I ever got through them, but you know how that goes. I want to suggest to you that in the church, especially in this day and age, in the church, the greatest need that we have is for the healing touch of God in our lives over some of these issues. To really face them, to come to terms with them, to let God bring the healing, but through the process, keep on course, keep doing what is right. I want to close with one last example. I had a man show up in my office one day. This is years ago. This wasn't here. But showed up in my office one day and said, could I talk to you? I hardly knew this guy. And he claimed to be a follower of Christ. So I say, sure, come on and sit down. Sits in the chair right near my desk. And he says, God told me not to be married anymore. And I said, oh, really? How do you know God told you that? Show me here where he said that. And he says, well, he just said it to me in my spirit. I shouldn't be married anymore. I said, well, I would beg to differ with you because you then know a different God than I do. Because the God I know says that in a marriage, let nobody rip that apart, not even yourself. I said, tell me the real reason why you want out of their marriage. Well, I finally found somebody who made me happy. I said, oh, really? And you think you're entitled to that? And he says, yeah, I'm entitled to it. And I said, you're a coward. You need to go back to your wife. You need to love her. Learn to love her. You need to cherish her because God didn't tell you to get divorced. So he called me a few names and he left and he did what he wanted to do anyhow. But you see, a person's true character will always come out under stress. When problems hit, a person's true character will always come out, whether we like it or not. And it's our choice on how we respond. Let me pray.